Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts," unquote. But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away. And in 1964, President Johnson took our silver away. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. And they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver money. In the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have now gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? If you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. And it's informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the baby boomers retirement. First couple of programs, I told you about all the 7s and 11s, the Department of Labor, the AARP, the American Association for the Retirement, or for retired persons or people. They paint a rosy picture of everything's right with the world and you haven't got a problem. Just sit back and relax and enjoy life. And then we took a look at some other articles that tell us that maybe things aren't quite as good as we thought they were. And then the last couple of programs, I showed you a report to the Congress. A report to Congress which was put out by the National Center for Policy Analysis. Now, for this week's programs, I went to the Internet. And we took out 26, look at my list here, 26 topics or 26 articles, of which about four or five of these articles deal with the actual economic condition of Social Security and Medicare, which is what I've been reporting on the last two or three programs, which is where reality is. Now remember, we said in the last program, you've got three sources of retirement income: personal savings, your company pension, or Social Security. Well, your personal pension over here doesn't cover 80% of people because only one in five has a personal pension. Your savings over here, on average, you baby boomers out there have $40,000, $45,000 or $42,000, something along that. That's about a one-year income. And you're going to be retiring for 10 or 15 years. So obviously that one-year savings is insufficient. Your pension for 80% of you is insufficient. Which leaves us with Social Security. Now, Social Security, they tell you plainly, is always insufficient. It's only a booster. It's only a minimum. It's only the place where you start. And I just showed you that Social Security is going upside down, and it's going upside down during the baby boomer retirement years. Sometime between 2012 and 2050. And I just took a look at the numbers. I've been crunching the numbers. I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you that on September 1st, 2011, I don't know when that's going to happen. I know it's going to happen because it's historically always happened this way in the past. When we do stupid things, we get stupid results. And we've been doing some stupid things over the past 100 years here in America. Things that historically we knew or should have known were bad policy decisions. But we made them anyway. And then as voters, we ratified those bad policy decisions by voting those people back into office. Or by failing to vote people into office who were going to correct those bad policy decisions. Or, better yet, electing people to office who were going to make good or correct policy decisions in the first place and avoid these bad policy decisions. In any event, sometimes we make bad decisions by what we do. Sometimes we make bad decisions by what we don't do. Now, there's a growing movement afoot here in America that says that we've got to take action and we've got to do something to save Social Security and Medicare. I'm here to tell you that there isn't anything that you're going to do that's going to save them. They're far beyond salvation. Just read the numbers. In the last program, I said, read them and weep. There isn't anything that's going to happen here that's going to save what's already there. So that means, like the Titanic, you're not going to save the Titanic. It already hit the iceberg. If there was any chance of saving the Titanic, it had to have been done by the policymakers up on the bridge before it hit the iceberg. And there were several policy decisions that needed to be made. And they made those decisions. That's correct. The authorities in control of the Titanic made all of the wrong policy decisions, as was proven out by the inevitable results of their decisions. And the same thing is true now with the economic decisions that have been made. 1913, we decided we wanted to go to a central bank. Okay, that was a bad policy decision, as was borne out by the Great Depression. We decided that we wanted to go to paper money, which was a bad decision, which was in opposition to thou shalt not steal in the Ten Commandments, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, which is a statute derived from that Ten Commandment law. That was a bad policy decision, but it was a decision we had to make, and it was a decision we made. In 1933, we made a decision to go off the gold standard. Okay, it was a bad policy decision, but it was a decision that needed to be made, and we made it. And there is a result that comes from it. In 1965, it was actually done in 64, but the decision was made in 64 to stop minting silver coin. It was a bad policy decision. And they started minting clad coins in 1965, and that's what we have to this day. In 1971, we decided not to pay our debts with gold at the international level. That was a bad decision, and we decided to go on a total fiat currency. 1935, we decided to install a retirement program called a Social Security. It was a bad policy decision. It violated that statute that in Exodus 21:28, which says that you shall practice strict liability. We said, no, we're going to go to limited liability. Well, okay, these are decisions that needed to be made, and the baby boomers, for the most part, didn't have anything to do with making these decisions. But they are all affected by them. We're all affected, whether you're a baby boomer or not. I'm affected by these decisions. And I'm on the great ship America just like everybody else. And I'm going to be affected by these decisions just like everybody else. But I'm going to make some different decisions for myself and my family, which I hope is going to ameliorate the inevitable consequences of these bad decisions. No, that's what every one of us as individuals have, that capacity. I don't have to participate in Social Security, and I opted out. I don't have to deal in Federal Reserve notes. I use gold and silver. I don't have to have a business license, so I practice private business. I don't have to retire, so I can keep right on working. You know, I can make changes in my lifestyle, and the baby boomers over here are being warned that they need to make some changes. For instance, here's an article that comes from thestar.com, www.thestar.com, and it says, "Boost savings, boomers warned. Two-thirds face financial woes in retirement if they can afford to retire at age 65. Well, that's 66%. Two-thirds of you are going to face some problems. A staggering two-thirds of Canadians expecting to retire in 2030 are failing to save enough money to cover basic household expenses in their golden years, even though most 40-somethings believe that they're stashing enough cash, says a new study from the Canadian Institute of Actuaries." I guess the Canadian Institute of Actuaries is about like this outfit that I've been citing from in the last couple programs called the National Center for Policy Analysis. The report titled "Planning for Retirement, Are Canadians Saving Enough?" issues a stern warning to the country's graying baby boomer generation. Scramble to sharply increase annual savings or plan to work past age 65 to avoid financial hardship. The message for most Canadians in their early to mid-40s is that they will need to save more if they expect to enjoy an independent retirement, Institute President Norman Gendron said. There is a gap between what Canadians are thinking and what they are actually planning and doing. And the study paints a bleak outlook for millions of Canadians born between 59 and 66. And it suggests those yuppies, many of whom have grown accustomed to high consumption lifestyles, could find themselves nickel and diming their way through retirement. The problem is that boomers have neglected to save, adding government supplements can only do so much. And Canada's public pension system is not intended to provide all of the income needed for an independent retirement, the study said, noting that it's only geared to replace about 40% of gross income for households' earnings and average industrial wage, which was about $40,000 in 2005. And they go through with the numbers and give you a pretty good report on the shortfall, which illustrates that the baby boomer problem isn't just something that occurs in the United States or is occurring here. It's occurring worldwide. Now here's another one. It says boomers aren't saving enough for retirement. This comes from MSNBC.com. So if you want this one, comes from www.msnbc. And it's boomers aren't saving enough for retirement. New York, nearly one-third of baby boomers age 51 to 61 are at risk of not having enough in savings to finance a comfortable retirement, according to a study being released Tuesday by the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. With its analysis, the center has joined the national debate over how much savings is enough and has done so on the side that says there's a shortfall. We just don't believe people are saving too much, a professor of management at Boston College said. A recently published academic study looked at retirement preparedness of Americans who were in their 50s in 1992 and concluded that at least 80% had more than enough. So in 1992, looking at people in their 50s, they had saved enough. Now they find that Boston College, the group 51 to 61, in 2004 found that 32% to be at risk for not being able to maintain their pre-retirement standard of living. Now that's here in the United States. Well, the good news is two-thirds of you are saving enough, and one-third of you are not. Now I went through this savings program. Now picture hyperinflation. I mean, you've got plenty, $400,000 in your 401k. Hyperinflation sets in and wipes it out. Now what are you going to do? And hyperinflation's come. How do I know that? You don't have to be a prophet to know it. Just take a look and read the underlying economic statistics. M1, M2, the International Forecaster reports twice a week. The Privateer reports twice a month. The Money Changer reports once a month. And there isn't a single one of those three publications that doesn't have something on inflation, M1, M2, and M3, that they're reporting on. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar. I'm not a Rhodes Scholar. I can read it. Tells me the story. I say, uh-oh. Now, I showed you here that the three sources, Social Security, pensions, and savings over here, are all going upside down. Social Security is going upside down through hyperinflation. Pensions are already upside down. The major companies are dropping them. 80% of you don't have a pension. And of the 20% of you that do have a pension, those will be wiped out right along with your savings when the hyperinflation takes over. So you have to solve that inflation problem. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to show you how to do that. There's a solution to this hyperinflation. There's a solution to this retirement. There's a solution to the baby boomers, or for the baby boomers, in their retirement years. I'm not complaining. I'm sitting here, and I'm saying, I'm prepared, I'm ready, and I'm not going to retire. And it's going to envelop me just like it's going to envelop you. My family, you know, has the same problem that your family has. I'm glad I'm not living in New Orleans. I mean, that's an added problem that you people down there have on the Gulf Coast that we don't have here. But, you know, nevertheless, you've got the same problem, and it's compounded down there. You got a bigger, more worser problem than we've got up here. But nevertheless, you know, you've got to face it just like we do. And there's a solution to this. And so tomorrow night I'm going to go through some of the numbers, and I'm going to show you how to put these numbers together and what you can do and what you need to be doing to give you a conclusion. I've often said, you know, if you don't have an answer to the problem, you don't need to talk about the problem. It could well be that the major news media and government and industry and so on, they don't have a solution to the problem, and that's why they don't talk about it. Although there's a number of think tanks out here that are telling you better get your act together and start thinking. Warning, two boomers, difficult questions ahead. As the second half of the boomer century looms, so do costly problems. New York Market Watch. This is www.marketwatch.com. Because they're such a big and robust part of the American population, 76 million of them were born between 1946 and 1964. The baby boomers have long set the agenda for the nation. Every once in a while I see these numbers. I see 76 million, 77 million, and 78 million. I don't know how many baby boomers there are. I never went out and counted them. And so I'm relying upon the numbers that I see come in here. But everybody seems to be agreed that it's somewhere between 75 and 80 million. It's a big bunch of people. And there are organizations that go out and do polling, and they ask them, you know, well, where do you buy your shoes, and where do you buy this and that? And so they come up with numbers, and then they give us reports. And, you know, if these trends or if these reports and these numbers continue on the way they have in the past, well, then there's going to be some conclusions that come from that. And one of the conclusions that we see here is that when these 75 to 80 million people retire, that is, they quit producing and they start consuming all that they think they're entitled to consume, there's going to be a big shortfall. So how is government going to deal with that shortfall? Well, they're not going to deal with it by paying them in 100 cent on the dollars by balancing the budget and eliminating inflation. In fact, what they're doing right now is increasing inflation. So that tells me the answer to the riddle. We're going to do it through hyperinflation. That's the way that governments have done it in the past. And then there's an outcome that comes from that. And I've reported on that. There's an outcome in Zimbabwe from the hyperinflation that they elected to engage in. And if that's the outcome that you want, then get after it. You're on the right track. I don't want that outcome, so I'm taking a different track. I got off that train. I got off that train in 1978. If you're still on that train, you missed a lot of years of opportunity to prepare for something different, but, you know, you didn't do that, and so here you are today. It's like playing a game of chess. You're sitting here without a queen, a rook, and one knight, and I come up and I look over your shoulder and I say, oh my God, and I look at the other side over there, you've got two pawns, and your opponent over there has got two pawns, plus your queen, rook, and knight. The game isn't over. You have not been defeated. There is some evasive action that you can take, but you're way behind the power curve. A good, skillful player might be able to save the game and actually win it. Probably the best you're going to do is stalemate it. But, you know, here's where you're at. So oftentimes I come up to my daughter and I take a look at her position on the chessboard and I say, huh, you're in good position. Or I come up and I look and I say, what in the hell happened here? What were you thinking? What were you doing? How did that happen to you? And so for many of you, you know, it's, well, what in the hell happened to you? How did that happen? How did you allow that? You're not defeated yet, but, you know, if you keep going like you're going here, you know, you're going to be in a world of hurt. You're going to lose this game. So, of these difficult questions, much of this will be highlighted in a two-hour Public Broadcasting Corporation documentary Wednesday at 9 p.m., titled The Boomer Century, 1946 to 2046. He's a psychologist and a gerontologist and one of the nation's leading students on the behavior of boomers and other mature Americans. Now, this came out on 7/30/07, so this thing is already history. But the point that I'm making here is that there are many, many people out here in the know who have been putting on programs and writing, and it's not carried by the mainstream press. So if you're getting your news and information from Katie Couric, you're probably about as dumb as a box of rocks. Now, if you're getting your information from public broadcasting, you're probably getting a little more information, but it's still insufficient. So if you're getting some information from the underground press, you're probably getting more valuable information, but maybe you're not getting all of the story. I always recommend two or three sources. The scripture says, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So here at the law school, we use that principle. When we go to put a story on, we get two or three witnesses. We get several sources of information. If those sources of information generally, you know, like here's one says 76 million. I read from you an article here, 77 million, and I saw one here, 78 million. Somewhere between 75 and 80 million. It's a bunch of people. I can't tell you with specificity that there are 77,511,468 baby boomers. I don't know them. Don't know that anybody else knows that. But when you get your information from two or three sources, put the information together, and it's telling you, it's sending you down the same trail. You're getting the same numbers. Now, I can't tell you that the year 2015, thus and such, but it could be 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, somewhere along in there. 5-6 year period. And so, there are more than one source of information. Much of the information comes right out of Social Security. Sometimes it comes right out of the government agencies themselves. Now that's how we do it here. So I'm giving you these sources here so that you can, you know, if you want to check them out, you know you can. You can just type in baby boomers and do a Google search and take off on your own. Go to Social Security and take a look at funding and so on. And it'll lead you to one and then lead you to another and lead you to another. That's what Dirk does. I tell him, why don't you get us something on the baby boomer retirement thing? I keep reading articles here. Bad news coming up. He came up with 26. That's what I'm reporting on. I have 26. I've got 4 or 5 here that deal with the economics. Now I'm going to go back to finish up this article. And it was a report made to Congress. And this is the reason I like this article is because it was made to all of your congressmen, every single member. 535 members of Congress all know this. They all have these numbers right in front of them. The President of the United States has it. The President Bush, to his credit, he told you back in 2004, he said, the Social Security Medicare system's unsustainable and we need private accounts. I don't know if you need private accounts or not. I don't know if you need to keep going just as you are. I don't know what you people on Social Security need to do. See, I'm not on Social Security. I'm not a member of the Social Security system or program. I looked at it years ago and said, I don't think this is for me, and I opted out. And I thought that was a good decision then. I think looking back on it was one of the more brilliant decisions that I made in my life. I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. I'm ready for the collapse of the American economy. And boys and girls, wherever you live in the world, and this program is heard in 75 countries around the world, wherever you live, when the American economy collapses, your economy is going to collapse right along with ours. Because our economy is 25% of the world's economy. For you Canadians, it's going to spell devastation. Can you say devastation, boys and girls in Canada? Because we Americans consume a tremendous amount of your raw materials, and we're not going to pay you for the raw materials that we bought from you in the past, and you're not going to send us any more unless we pay you, and we're not going to have the money to pay you, so you're going to cut us off, which means you're going to lose your export market, which is where your economy is. Boys and girls, can you spell economic devastation in Toronto? So, I think you Canadians need to start taking action. And I would say for you Aussies and you New Zealanders and you Europeans, you need to take action. Even you Chinese, Koreans, and Japanese. And that's because your export markets are geared to ours. Now, some people are going to fare out better than others. Some people on the Titanic fared out better than others. It was an event that affected every single person on the Titanic. They were all affected by the captain's decision to set a new transatlantic record. But some of those people actually came out better than others. And of course, the people that didn't get on the ship at all were better off than those that got on. And those 800 survivors fared out better than the 1,500 victims. And the same thing happened in the last Great Depression. The same thing will happen in the coming Depression. Some of us are going to fare out better than others. So decisions have to be made. Now, the decisions at governmental levels have already been made for you. George Bush made the decisions for me already as an American citizen. Heck, he and the Congress, they've made decisions for me. Now, I took a look at the decisions that they made, and I said, I don't like that program, and I'm getting the hell out of here. So, the decisions made for me by Social Security and my Social Security account, I looked at it, and I said, no, sir, I'm getting off this train right here. And I did. I got off. Some of you have remained on the train, and you're still on the train, and I get letters in here every day saying, Mr. Gordon, I want to learn how to get out of the system. I want to learn how to get off this communist train. I said, well, terrific. That's what our school is designed to do. We teach 8 schools here, which are predicated upon the scriptures. It's my firm conviction that the Ten Commandments is the basis of law in Anglo-Saxon administration. And when we jumped the tracks of sanity back in 1913 with this Federal Reserve Bank and paper money, unjust weights and balances, we jumped the tracks of the Ten Commandments. So it's fairly simple. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and let's start practicing those economic principles. There are 15 of them given in the Bible. I think if you'll go back to those 15 economic laws in the Bible, I think you'll fare out a lot better. That's been my conclusion. Works well for me. Works well for my students who have tested it and tried it. It doesn't sound very logical. I'll grant you that. Because when I tell people to use gold and silver coin, they say, yeah, but they don't take gold down at Walmart. What the hell are you buying at Walmart for? Can you figure out a solution to the Walmart problem? You know, here in the United States, we've been dumbed down to a degree here, you know, that unless it is spelled out in some kind of a government booklet, we don't know what the hell to do next. Americans need a government booklet to tell them when to go to the bathroom and what kind of toilet paper to buy. I'm suggesting that we get to a point in our lives when we can decide for ourselves what's good for us. Most Americans cannot decide what's good for them. They need an advisor. That's why we have lawyers. Because you're not legally competent, you need legal advice. Most Americans cannot take care of their bodies, so they need medical advice. Americans don't know how to save for retirement or prepare for retirement, so they have financial advisors. These are guardians. These are professionals. These are professional guardians in a guardian-ward relationship. I'm suggesting that our guardians have let us down, that they have not provided for us in a very logical or systematic modality that is going to take care of us. And that's why we have an economy that's ready to implode. That's why we have so much crime, violence, juvenile delinquency, ignorance, and stupidity in our public educational system. So, I suggest that we become competent. It's a wild new concept that every individual become competent, legally competent, medically competent, economically competent, to direct your own life. It's time for you to decide what's good for you. And you should not write me a letter and say, Mr. Gordon, what should I do next? Because if you do, you're saying, well, I'm dissatisfied with my current guardian and I want you to take over as being my guardian. Let me assure you that if I become your guardian, you will become just as disenchanted with me as you are with your current guardian. I'm suggesting that you become competent and become your own guardian and take care of yourself. It's a wild new idea. About 5% of you people out there will be able to do that. The other 95% cannot. And that's because psychologically about 5% of the people are leaders and about 95% are followers. About 5% are extroverts and 95% are introverts. Introverts need a guardian. Extroverts do not. And then the extroverts want to become the guardians of the 95% introverts, which they have done. And the 95% introverts then support the 5% of the extroverts who have become the total parasites in our society. And those parasites are the lawyers, the doctors, and the politicians, the preachers, the professionals, who are your guardians, who are guiding and directing you in all of the wrong directions, down the wrong rabbit trails. All right, I got to give you a reminder here. It's that time. The FCC and various countries require that we identify ourselves and tell you who we are and what we're doing. Not necessarily in your neck of the woods, but maybe in somebody else's neck of the woods. And this program is heard now in 75 countries around the world. And so as we're picked up on radio stations, we have to give this reminder every day that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. And this law school is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio logs, schedule, and archives. That can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on subject matter such as law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free introductory CD package, just call the Law School and ask for one. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Keep in mind, however, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we endorse or recommend will reciprocate and recommend or endorse the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. Now, they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, we would invite your inquiry to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the baby boomers, and in particular, the economics behind the baby boomer retirement. There are consequences that are coming down the pike. When America decided under the Nixon administration in August of 1971 that we would no longer pay our foreign exchange deficit in gold, we made a decision. We Americans came to a problem. There was a solution to the problem. A policy decision was made, and there are today ramifications that come from that policy decision, even though Mr. Nixon is long dead. And those policy decisions affect George Gordon today in 2007, and they affect you, and they affect the Chinese people, they affect the people of Japan. Maybe not directly, but it certainly does affect everybody on this planet, because this country, the United States of America, for all of you people around the world, you may not know this, but we represent 25% of the world's consumption. We represent 25% of everything that goes on economically in the world. And we only represent 6% of the world's population. So we are a great big frog in a very small pond. As the old saying goes, when America gets cold or catches cold, the rest of the world gets pneumonia. Well, get ready, all you people out there in the world, because we're about to get pneumonia here in America. And when we get pneumonia over here, I don't know what that portends for the rest of you, but it's going to be worse than what it is here. Now, what's coming down on us here in the United States is bad. So if you're planning on retirement and driving around the United States and Canada in your Winnebago, I would suggest that you get some copies, that you do some research and get some numbers together. And maybe you can afford to do that. See, I don't know about you. You may be a guy that was working for Enron. And maybe you cashed in all of your Enron stock, converted it to gold, and you've got it stashed away in a hole in the ground someplace. And maybe you can afford a Winnebago or two. Maybe you'll be able to afford $6 or $12 a gallon gasoline. I don't know. I took a look at it and said, well, I got a motor home, and I didn't think I could afford $2 a gallon gas, and so my motor home's parked. I quit driving it. Gasoline's $2.63. That's more than I can handle. Okay, so that's the end of my Winnebago days. Now, if you're like me, then I would suggest that probably most of you out there are probably about like me, You know, one of the average Joe six packs. You know, I'm not drinking, you know, the expensive Scotch whiskey and sipping whiskeys. I'm drinking Heineken beer. I guess maybe I'm drinking the Cadillac of beers. One of these days I'll be down to old Milwaukee. Right now I'm drinking Heineken, but I ain't drinking Jack Daniels. So, you know, everybody's got to decide, you know, well, where am I on the economic ladder? Where am I on the scale? So a lot of times I think people say, well, you know, it's all right for you, Gordon. You know, you're a multimillionaire. No. I'm just average, run-of-the-mill Joe Sixpack. But, you know, even Joe Sixpack over here can, you know, set himself up so that he can be relatively secure. For instance, I don't buy milk at $3 a gallon. I milk my own cow. Little help. I can grow food. I got a little extra food here. I got meat, milk, butter, and eggs. I grew up myself. Well, Franklin Sanders, you know, does that. Well, Franklin, he's out here in Tennessee. He's got a little farm over here, and he's a self-sufficient farmer. And I would suggest that every American in 1920 who was a self-sufficient, 50% of us were self-sufficient subsistence farmers in 1920. Did you know that? One out of every two Americans. Today, 3% of Americans live on the land, 97% live in the city. 97% of you are no longer self-sufficient. You people are dependent upon the military-industrial complex. I don't think that's a very good program. That's my personal opinion. Don't let me tell you how to live your life. My suggestion, though, would be, why don't you get the numbers and crunch them for yourself? Now listen to some more of these numbers. We went through the trust funds. These trust funds are as phony as $3 Federal Reserve notes. We took a look at the number of people that are going to retire and the number of people coming into the system, and we found out that there are fewer people coming in and more people going out. And that means that you've got to raise taxes or cut benefits. I don't know which is coming. I don't know if Congress is going to do one, the other, or both, but they're both coming. There's going to be a cut in benefits, and there's going to be a raise in taxes. And the tax may be the inflation tax, which is the one that nobody knows very much about. That's the one where we just take the money and you pay the tax in higher prices down at the grocery store. Now, there's one more important statistic that all of you people need to grasp. That's the 5% of you that have an ear to hear and an eye that can see. Now listen to this number. Get your pencil out. Sharpen it on both ends. This is crucial. This is a backbreaker. This one, as the saying goes, I guess I better not say it. But if you can remember the saying, you know, this is it. If you take all of the dollars that are printed and out in circulation that you people have in your 401ks, that you people have in the banks, that you people have invested in your stocks, in your bonds, in your mortgages, in your house, your equities, and all that wealth. If you take all the wealth that's out there, and if everybody takes it and goes down to Walmart and cashes it in today, everybody will get 2 cents on the dollar, 2%, which is just exactly what the dollar is worth compared to what it was worth in 1930. You haven't lost anything. Well, unless you had a $20 bill in 1930 and you saved it in the mattress until 2007. Okay, your $20 bill is worth 2%, which is worth 40 cents. And you still have 40 cents worth of purchasing power compared to 1930. You know, in nominal terms, it now costs $20 to buy what 40 cents did back in 1930. Now, the reason I point this out to you is that there's a stream in the economy. Every nation's economy has a stream of goods and services. Now, down at Walmart, they replace the inventory on their shelves every day. They've got these UPC stickers. And you take your mayonnaise and you run it through and it subtracts a jar of mayonnaise from the back room. And so at the end of the day, they push a button and they say, well, how much mayonnaise did we sell today? Well, we sold 137 jars of mayonnaise in this Walmart store today. So they immediately put in an order for 137 jars of mayonnaise, which are going to be distributed from their central warehouse to this Walmart store tomorrow morning at 3 a.m. when the truck backs up to the big dock that they're going to unload. And that's called just-in-time delivery. When I was a kid, we had a little store called the C&V Market. And the C&V Market had a warehouse out behind it. And about once every 3 months, there'd be a truck or two come in, and they would fill up the warehouse. So this is a little corner grocery store, about like a 7-Eleven. Okay, now, at our house, we had a pantry. And, of course, David Wagner and Ed O'Neill and all the people in the community. You know, this is when little Georgie is a kid. Say, we all have a one-year supply of food in our own homes. Down at the grocery store, there's a 90-day supply at the C&V Market and Harry Connick and all the Canhams and all the little stores around us. So that if there is some kind of a glitch in the supply problem, we, living in Eureka, California, have a one-year supply on our shelves, plus we have the C&V Market. So we had about a 15-month supply. Boys and girls, today in America, you have a three-day supply. There's just 3 days between you and I'm hungry. That's it. 3 days. And we depend upon those trucks coming across the Mexican border to bring us our tomatoes every single day from Hermosillo. Walmart depends upon those tomatoes nationwide coming from Hermosillo, Mexico, across the Mexican border. If that border is shut off, there's no tomatoes. We depend upon garlic coming in containers from China. And if those containers are disrupted, there's no more garlic. And 50% of our food now comes from outside our borders. That number just scares the living hell right out of me. That ought to turn you into a Bible-believing Christian, Bible-thumping, church-going Christian, if anything would. It ought to just scare the living bejesus out of every one of us. 50% of the food that we eat comes from outside our borders, and we have an $800 billion a year deficit. Okay, let's suppose that all of your food comes from your buddy Bob, and you owe Bob $50,000. And Bob keeps supplying you with all of your food, and you keep making payments to him. You know, last year you owed him $45,000, this year you owe him $50,000, and next year you're going to owe him $55,000. So your debt to Bob is growing by about $5,000 a year. Bob's pretty happy with you. You're making your payments, and you're going into debt more every year, and you're buying more and more from Bob, and Bob is happy. You're happy. But we're taking a look here at your overall projection for paying this $50,000, $55,000, $60,000, $65,000, $70,000, $75,000, $80,000 debt back to Bob. One of these days, Bob's going to crunch the numbers, and he's going to say, oh my God, old George isn't able to pay me back. And I've already got a lien on all of George's assets. And I'm telling you here, kids, that one of these days the Chinese are going to wake up and say, oh my God, these Americans can't pay us. They can't pay us what they owe us. And they got us over here working our hearts out, producing all these big screen TVs and tennis shoes at the rate of $800 billion a year, and they're only able to pay $200. See, we produce about $200 billion in export, and we consume $800, that's a $600 billion deficit. We're living way beyond our means, which is wonderful. I don't blame you for living beyond your means. Hell, I don't blame you for living the good life, you baby boomers. Get after it. But, you know, like everything else in life, it's like a trip to Flo's Whorehouse. God, it's all sevens and elevens, you know, when you're in there with Margie, you know. But then, I don't know, who was in with Margie yesterday? Some guy with AIDS, herpes, or VD? You know, again, I'm not telling you not to go down to the whorehouse. I'm just telling you that you need to be prepared for the consequences that come from regular visits to Flo's. We need to be prepared for the inevitable outcome of paying people with 3x5 cards that say, I owe you, and not paying them in goods and services, meat, milk, butter, and eggs. Because at some point in time, they're going to sit there and say, hey, we got to get paid here. And if they don't get paid, they're going to shut you off, put you on COD. That's what happened down in Argentina. And when that happens, boy, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth and riots in the streets and broken windows at the bank and martial law and a suspension of your constitution and your Bill of Rights. Police state. I get letters once in a while and they say, I'm from the People's Republic of Michigan. Boys and girls, you ain't seen the People's Republic yet. You wait until martial law comes in here. You wait until you want to drive from here to Springfield and go through four or five roadblocks. And then you'll find out what martial law is all about. I mean, you know, there's people all over the world been living like that all their lives. It's going to be a shock for Americans, Canadians, and Australians and New Zealanders. You know, we're all of us, you know, we're all virgins in Hollywood. We've never experienced anything like that. You people in England are learning about it, and you're going to learn more. You people in Europe, just stick with the program here. You'll figure this out before it's all over. All right, so now, the present value of the unfunded liability. You keeping in mind now that if you cash in what you got, you can get 2 cents on the dollar if everybody cashes in. That says to me, we want to cash in early on. I already cashed in. I don't have any dollar-denominated assets left. I got rid of them all. And this liability, this unfunded liability. Last year, for the first time since the inception of these programs, the Social Security trustees did something private entities do routinely. They calculated the present value of the difference between the promises that we've made and the expected revenues dedicated to keeping those promises. These calculations were made for the traditional 75-year horizon and what economists consider the more accurate procedure, looking indefinitely into the future. These implied unfunded liabilities are enormous. Listen to this. Get your pencil out. Sharpen on both ends. Ready for this? Social Security's long-run cash flow deficit is $11.1 trillion, almost equal to the current size of the entire U.S. economy. That's not Medicare and the rest of it. That's just Social Security. The total shortfall of Medicare Part A hospital insurance and Part B doctor services total $47.7 trillion. And then add to that the new prescription drug benefit, that's going to take another $17.7 trillion. All right, now here's the way President Bush viewed this. He says, okay, we're already upside down $47 trillion, so what the hell is another $17 trillion? Let's pass this drug bill for the senior citizens and buy the 2006 election, which they did. They did. You seniors are sitting out there with your new $17 trillion deficit for your prescription drugs, just happy as clams at high tide. I took a look at that and I said, oh my God, 47 plus 17. Hey, I don't think you people can pay that, but your government is obligated to pay it, and they're going to pay it by just printing the money and passing it out. You know, doctor's office call today costs $30 here locally. Wait until it costs $300 or $3,000. That's what these numbers, trillions, add up to. The doctor will just say, well, okay, I got to have more of those cheaper dollars, and so he just keeps jacking up his prices. Now, number three, the unfunded liability of Medicare and Social Security combined total $76.5 trillion at 7 times the size of your economy. Let's try it this way. Let's suppose you're making $50,000 a year, and you have an obligation of 7 times that, $350,000. Now, the $50,000 that you're spending today, you know, you're spending your money and you're living your life and doing your thing, and you're probably going in debt a little bit every year if you're like the average American. Now I'm going to hang this $350,000 debt on you, and I'm going to tell you now you got to pay this off. That means that you got to stop going in debt. You got to contract your standard of living a significant amount. You know, if you're going in debt 10%, that's $5,000 a year. So you got to contract by 20%. That's $10,000. Will $5,000 service a $350,000 debt? Well, let's try it. $350,000 divided by $5,000 equals 70 years. Can you get a 70-year mortgage on your house? No, about 30 years is about the limit. This Social Security debt, kids, can't be serviced, even if you contracted your standard of living by 20%. So to pay this off, you got to have a minimum of $10,000. So you take the same $350,000. That's 35 years. Do you think you can get a 35-year note on this? And what's the interest rate going to be? So if you contracted your standard of living by 40%, and if you could find the mortgage, could you then afford to make the payments? Remember I said earlier? I said this problem is insoluble. First of all, you've got to contract your standard of living by 40%, and then you got to make the payments plus the interest, and the interest is up in the air because you don't know what the interest rate's going to be. It could be as much as the payments. And if it's 6%, it's going to be as much as the payments. 6% interest. My God, that takes you up to a 60% decrease in your standard of living right there. America cannot contract 60% and make all these payments. So that's a done deal. I'm just telling you the bad numbers here. Now, this means that without ever raising taxes and cutting benefits, we need $76.5 trillion invested right now at the government's borrowing rate. And because we have not made that investment, our unfunded liability under Social Security is growing at the rate of $667 billion a year. The unfunded liability under Medicare is growing at the rate of $4 trillion a year. It's unsustainable. And there's no way that you can pay it off. So that means bankruptcy and default, then, is the only solution. Well, when governments default, they just print the money and pay it off, which is hyperinflation. See where we're going here, kids? It's like I said, read them and weep. This report, by the way, I'd suggest you get a copy of this if it's any way in the world you can get it. It's the House Ways and Means Committee testimony of Mr. John C. Goodman of the National Center for Policy Analysis. This date may help you. He made this on Thursday, May 19th, 2005. Now, that's Thursday, May 19th, 2005. John C. Goodman made this report from the National Center for Policy Analysis to the House Ways and Means Committee. And if you want, if you can't get it anywhere else, you send me a stamped self-addressed envelope. It's 5 pages, and I'll copy it at my expense off of my machine. Just send me your name and address, you know. I'll put it in an envelope. Send it to me. Don't make me write this out. Don't make me pay the postage now. And then I'll copy this report for you and I'll send it to you. And you can sit there and read them and weep in your spare time. I'm out of time. Again, I'm going to have to give you your final reminder, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up, and we got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, with the conclusion to the baby boomers. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.